edition, we're going to be looking here at the third section in Be'er HaRishon. The Maharal is going to be analyzing a specific statement of Chazal, which is an incredible statement of Chazal. It's very, very hard to understand. It's not like one of these fancy esoteric ones. It's a statement, it's an affirmative statement that Chazal make that's very, very surprising and would be very, very hard for us to understand. And he's approaching this, and we're going to use the opportunity of explaining what he's saying here to do as well at the same time the review of what we talked about last time. Instead of, as we usually start off with, a few minutes of review, because this explanation is going to essentially build upon that which we learned last time, we'll integrate the review into the explanation. The Perek Eisen Pasen, he quotes a Gemara in Erevin, which says, V'yaser mehema b'ni hizohir. And even more than this, my son, be careful. So he says, what is this request for additional, for extra care? He says, Hizoyer yaser b'divrei seifrim b'divrei taira. Chazal say, be even more careful when it comes to divrei seifrim, to the words of the scribes, which means, of course, to rabbinic commandments, than with divrei taira, than with the words of the taira. By the way, rabbinic commandments, you understand, just as a matter of, that does not mean when your local friendly rabbi asks you to bring donuts, right? The rabbinic commandments, we're talking about the things which were established by the rabbinic legislature when there was such a possibility. Takonos Chachamim, from the Anshei Knesset Hagdola, from the time of the Second Temple, things like that. Those are the kind of rabbinic commandments that we're dealing with here. So he says, be more careful about their words than about Divrei Torah, than about what the Torah says. Shedivrei Torah asei v'leisa asei. When it comes to the words of the Torah, some things the Torah says, do it. Some things the Torah says, don't do it. If you do it, great. If you don't do it, remember by the thing, so then there's not necessarily a punishment for non-fulfillment of a mitzvah. By a prohibition, so, sometimes they'll give you a few lashes. But the divrei seifrim ha'over aleihem chayav misa. But the words of the sages, the rabbinic commandments, somebody who transgresses them gets the death penalty. Deserves death. Now you understand what I mean by an incredible statement? Vim taimar. So the Gemara just concludes in this hail the yesh ben mamish mipnei malei nichtavu. If they are significant, so why weren't they written? The issue is that, as the verse in Kohelis, which this is based on, says, there's just will be an infinite amount of rabbinic legislation, so therefore we have Kadosh Baruch Hu left it for the rabbis to enact over time, but they did not want to do it to begin with. So that's the second part of the Gemara. The first part of the Gemara that we have to understand is this amazingly difficult to understand statement. We know that laws which are written in the Torah, we are always going to consider to be more strict. From a halachic vantage point, a classic example, let's say you have something and you're not sure, you come upon something, you find a piece of meat someplace, and you're not sure whether it's kosher meat or non-kosher meat. You can't eat it, right? But if you come across something and you know that it's certainly going to be kosher d'oraisa. So let's give an example, You have a question of eino ben yomo, right? You have something, you have a pot or a fork or something like that that may have once been a problem, right? But you know that the last time that it was used or the problematic usage would have been 3 days ago. If you knew it, and I knew that fork, it was a fleishig fork that I used with milchiks 3 days ago, so then you would say, I'm not supposed to use it now. It doesn't matter that it's 3 days ago and whatever taste that is absorbed in it might be a little weak. So the Rabbanan still said, at least, the rabbi still said, you don't use it until you purge it of whatever non-kosher thing it has in it. But let's say somebody went and restocked the cutlery drawer, and that fork right, that you had put aside, you know, in that very, very distinct spot, 3 inches off of the counter, right, off the edge of the counter, where you would have expected everybody would have noticed. Of course it's a problem, right? Why are they touching it? So, and they go and they take it and they clean it and they put it back in the drawer, and now you know you have a problem, but you have no idea which one it is. So you're dealing here, I mean, it's much more complicated than I'm making it, but the you're dealing here where even if it is a problem, it's a rabbinic problem, and when I pick up a fork, I don't know, is this the problem, is this not the problem? So we may be able to say, Safek Drabanan Lakula, right? That's just a rabbinic command which comes up. You're not sure whether it's a problem or not, you could be lenient. And in general, we know that we're going to treat rabbinic commandments by and large as being not as severe as commandments which we have directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we from Hashem, and we would imagine that, you know, that should be the case. There are some times in the Gemara where the Gemara says Rabbanon asu chizuk ledivreihem yoser mishel Torah. Sometimes the Gemara says that the sages created like an artificial reinforcement of their words, because they knew that somebody will say, oh, that's only Drabbanan. That's only a rabbinic enactment. And then they'll play sort of like fast and loose with it. So therefore, the Rabbanan could have perhaps said, you know what? We're going to reinforce it, in a sense, artificially, because we know that people have a tendency to take it easy with these rules. So they'll make it stronger. But that's admittedly because of the inherent weakness of the rabbinic law, and we don't want people to take it too easy, so therefore we might overcompensate. But something like this, Torah laws, you have positive commandments, you have negative commandments, but you know, so for some of them there are punishments, for some of them there are not noticeable punishments, but when it comes to rabbinic laws, boom. It's not true. It doesn't seem to be true. Chayav Misa, I mean, they certainly don't take a person out for a death penalty. If a person violates a rabbinic law, it's not like the court is going to, the Beis Din is going to haul him out and kill him using one of the methods of the death penalty. That is certainly not the case. So on some other level, a person's going to be deserving of the death penalty as a result. But what level is that? Why is that true? In what way is that true that we say be more careful in this sense about the words of the Chachamim? Very basic question, right? This is not a fancy story, you know, about this rabbi who was walking and suddenly he started, levitating or something like that. You know, this is just a statement which the Gemara is using, and it seems to be like overkill, very very hard to understand. He says the people. How could you say such a thing? To be more careful. So the Maral explains this in a very, very, very interesting way. And in explaining it, he explains another question, which I think many of us are bothered with at one stage or another. We don't need to know the Talmud and Erevin to be bothered by this question. Right. Many of you are probably hearing the statement of the Gemara for the first time, so now that you heard it, you have the question. But there's another question which you may have had before this. And that was, when was the last time that you did something wrong? Don't worry, the question isn't over yet. We wouldn't ask that question. But when was the last time that you did something wrong, and as soon as you did something wrong, a lightning bolt came out and zapped you. When was the last time that you had, when you did, the Torah says, don't do this. And we test the boundaries, sometimes.
You can't because it became a question.
So we say the classic thing, very good, that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have done that, so then it would have robbed us of our free will. Right? A person has free will whether they want to put their hand in a fire. In a certain level, they do. But it's not really free will, because you know that if you put your hand in the fire, la'olein rachmanu tzlan, it'll get burnt. So it's a no-brainer. And in order to be able to have free will, you need to, you can't have the issues of life as a no-brainer. If Shmirah Shabbos came with, you know, with lightning bolts, you know, yes, no, so then it would really be essentially a no-brainer. So that's an approach. That's a classic approach. But the Maharal, surprise, surprise, takes a different approach to answering this question. And the approach which he takes is as follows.
No
honey? It's not an issue of sweet. Thank you. There's another one, I think. It's not an issue of sweet, it's an issue of throat. This should be enough. There you go. So Maharal takes the following approach. It says lightning bolts or the like would be manifestations in the physical, tangible world of a problem. A person will do something. A person will do, let's say, let's talk about Shabbos. So a person will do something Shabbos related or Kashrus related, or whatever it is. And the issue which they've been working with, you know, the Shabbos, the Kashrus is something, you know, you look at it, it's like, what's the deal? You know, it's not like putting your hand in the fire. When you put your hand in the fire, you're doing something that goes against, that's going against something which is an obvious issue in the physical world. And the consequences are therefore going to be felt within the physical world. But Shabbos, Kashrus, while of course it involves physical actions, but the issue which it poses, the issue which Shabbos poses, the issue which eating this kind of food or that kind of food poses, is not something which is looked at or which is appreciated because of a difference within the Olam HaTeva, within the world of nature. It's because of some metaphysical quality, something from the spiritual world behind it. And therefore, says the Maharal, actions, events, things which a person does within the physical world bring consequences within the physical world. But actions which a person does within the spiritual world, which affect that dynamic within the person and within the world, Mehechetesi, based on what should we assume that there should automatically be a kind of ramification in physical life? We understand that whatever it is that the Torah says for this Avera, there may be some physical consequence. The Bezdin, the court, will take the person and do and inflict this punishment or that punishment for this action, for that action. We understand that however the Torah chose to do that, it's only part of the picture. There's this world and there's the world to come. And the real place in terms of where the consequences of our spiritual actions, good or otherwise, are going to be felt and noticed is in our state of affairs, our state of being, in that world, in the spiritual world. Lightning bolts, you know, that implies a kind of special, out of the ordinary, divine intervention to make something stop happening. But it's not on the realm of the normal cause and effect. If I could just mention an important and well-known comment of the Ramban. That the Ramban says that we talk about nisim. What are nisim? Nisim are miracles. Miracles, you know, Mitzrayim, you turn the water into blood, and you have all these wild animals, kasan, you know, sprout out from all over the place, and who knows what else. You know, at the stroke of midnight, all the firstborns will die. Right? This is these are nisim. Clearly, nisim, what the Ramban coined, called nisim gluyim, open, revealed miracles. But then, there are nisim nistarim, and there are hidden miracles. And the Ramban says, for instance, the idea that we all just recited in Kriyashma, that if the Jewish people as a nation are listening to the mitzvahs and doing everything which Hashem commands, then rain will come in season with great plenty, and the land will flourish and the plants will grow and so on and so forth. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful promise. And when you go outside and you see it raining, you don't see anything unusual. You don't see anything which is miraculous. That's normal. It's a very, very normal kind of thing. But that these normal results should come as a result of these spiritual activities, says Ramban, that's a ness. That's a miracle. It's not less of a miracle than a revealed miracle. It's just exactly that. It's not revealed. But again, it's a miracle. Why? Because you're bridging spiritual cause with physical effect. You're making an effort in the spiritual. We would understand if somebody would say, you know, the entire Kriya Shema is a metaphor. It's a metaphor. It doesn't mean that when you go and you do all of these things, then it's going to rain. It's just, we didn't know how to describe to you what life is like in the world to come. So he said, it's going to be like as if you're a farmer and it's raining and everything will grow and you'll have lots of hay to feed your cows. Now that to me is the picture of heaven. Right? That's the way the Torah is going to describe it to us. If you would say that, fine. I would be fine. The effect is really in the spiritual world, but we're describing it metaphorically in these terms. But that's not the case. There is some promise, at least again when it's Shamua Tishmu in the national sense, the Jewish people as a nation do things right, that there's going to be for the spiritual causes, for the spiritual actions, a physical effect. That's a ness. That's a miracle to bridge that gap.
Why is that a ness? Because you're not expecting it? I mean, if you understand that this is how the Rabbanu Shalom constructed his island, that there are these connections between Rukhni and Gashmi, and that if you... Well, because we're ignorant.
Okay.
It's a miracle because we're like the primitive caveman. Oh, look what's going on. Yishoma, jet, to him, it's amazing. But if you understand the engineering of the jet, it's mishkenes. It's the same thing here.
Good. And indeed, there are many who would say it that way. There are many who would say it that way, that really it's not what we would call a miracle, because this is the spiritual nature of the world, that it is not two distinct systems, that the spiritual world and the physical world are not two distinct systems that do it, but there is some kind of an interface between them. That's a way to say it. The Ramban chooses to say it this way, that it's not simply, you know, a cause and effect in a sort of natural, it is bridging the gap between the physical world and the spiritual world, and that can be called miraculous, no matter how it occurs, openly or otherwise. So the Maharal, that's the Ramban. I hope I didn't say the Maharal. But the Maharal says, in that same sense, that when a person does an action, we do not expect that there should be quote-unquote real world, you know, physical world consequences, because the issues are happening in a spiritual world, and the issues are issues of a spiritual cause and effect. Says the Maral, that's by mitzvahs d'oraisa. That's by Torah commandments. And here we come back to review in context that which we learned in the Maral last week. The Maral was discussing the idea, the categories of mitzvahs d'rabbanan, of rabbinic commandments. Like what are they? We spoke about putting up safeguards and so on and so forth. But then he said as well, what we learned about last week was that there are mitzvahs that it takes the divine wisdom to create. And there are mitzvahs that it doesn't take the divine wisdom to create. That just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you remember, we learned last week, I brought you the Ramban's interpretation of Nase Adam in explaining the Maharal. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu did when he created man was, he said, let us make man. What's the idea, let us make man? Classic question. Hashem was a committee. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is the one and only. So Hashem made man by himself, just like he made everything else by himself. What does it mean, Nase Adam? So the Ramban says, simple and very, very, very significant pshat. He says, normally when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made something, So it was a simple creation. Hashem created the heaven and the earth. He made it. Then the earth, Hashem said, let the earth produce. Let the earth produce its plants. Let the earth produce the animals. Let the seas produce the birds, the fish, and so on and so forth. Fish and the birds. However, when it came to Adam, what Hashem did was, he says, look, I want the earth to produce the body, and I am going to produce and insert the neshama. I'm going to produce and insert the soul. So indeed there is a shared participation here in creation. And part of man is indeed created from that which existed already. Part of man was created from the earth. The earth created the teva, the physical component of man. Hashem, yes, Hashem formed. We don't see you and I. We could put a seed in the ground and expect a plant to come forth, but we could never do something to produce a cow from the ground. You know, Hashem only was able to do that. But he did that. He produced the cow from the ground, whereas Adam, he didn't produce from the ground. Partially it was produced from the ground, and partially it was produced from the heavens. It was produced by both of them. That's why the Maharal says, Nase Adam. He was speaking to the creation that existed already, and he said, you do this along with me. And the Maharal said, a virkung, it's like a lightning bolt, a lightning bolt of sort of its own. He says, in Tyra there are two realms. There's the realm which HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, which Hashem gives, which comes completely and totally from above. Those are the mitzvahs of the Tyra, the mitzvahs which Hashem said, which only Hashem said. In a certain sense, which only Hashem could have said. Don't ask me about Mishpatim right now. We're going to leave that for another time. You know, the common sense law, so to speak. But the mitzvahs which are coming from above, that's Hashem like blowing into the nostrils of the human being. There's nothing that exists that creates this or that could have created this. This is being created from scratch, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from above. But on the other hand, there's elements of law. There's elements of Torah, there's elements of Shleimus HaAdam, of that which it will take, as the Maharal explained last week, L'Hayishiras HaAdam, all part of one common mission to make man right, that Hashem says, you can create that part. Like Hashem said in the creation of man, let the earth create the physical part. There are parts which can be created by common sense and by human nature, and that part Hashem leaves to man to do. And he gave us a mitzvah. He says, you know, I empower the sages and let them create laws as well, according to their understanding. A law which is created according to their understanding is, so to speak, more of a natural law than a law which comes from above, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, only something which could have come from a supernatural, from a place which is above the simple nature of the world. Says the Maharal, rabbinic law, therefore, is the law that people would appreciate, would understand. It doesn't require, and it doesn't necessarily come from, something which is above and beyond. It's something which comes from human sense. Yes, maybe a human sense which is the sense of our sages, which is helped and imbued and encouraged by their Torah knowledge and so on and so forth. But ultimately, it's by human sense. And when you can understand why this needs to be done or why this need not be done, then the consequences of that action are also going to be seen and understood by your eyes. Understand what he's saying? Isn't that... You hear? It's such an Einfall. I'm sorry, guys. Whatever an Einfall is. It's a... Boom. It's a... a mitzvah which you could not perceive, which you could not understand. Hashem had to give it over to you from another world. In a certain sense, it remains in that invisible, otherworldly realm. And you do it, you don't do it. If you don't have an eye to another world, you won't be able to see, you won't be able to notice or appreciate the difference. But a mitzvah which you can discern and create with your eyes as a human being, so then there will be necessarily consequences that you will see as a human being. Now, Chayav Misa, you get the death penalty. Of course it doesn't mean, again, you know, take him out to the gallows and hang him there. The Gemara here is not making that kind of a halachic statement. So of course it's not, doesn't mean that. In a certain sense, it's rabbinic hyperbole, which is something that was not reserved for the men of the Great Assembly, right? That applies to any rabbi you ever listen to. Right? In a certain sense, that is a little bit of a... You'll see he's going to explain a little bit more. He'll give meat to it, that it's chas v'shalom, not simply just wild and crazy exaggeration. But it doesn't. It's not meant as a strict halachic legal statement. But even then it was a problem before we started this morning, because why should they say something and say, oh, Torah laws, those are only, you know, this, that, this way, that way. But rabbinic laws, there it's going to be chayav misa. Says Maral, again, it's not that we're saying that this one is less of a thing or more of a thing in the pure sense. Certainly, he says, in the Olam Haba, in the world, in that other world, you'll see the tremendous, tremendous impact of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, that in a sense it's going to be deeper there. But in the world that you inhabit, the things that you understand, or the things that your fellow human beings could understand as that which had to be done, you will see the impact when it goes wrong. You will see that much more immediately. It's more of a tangible thing, not a lightning bolt, but an erosion.
Can I ask a question? Is it like davening three times a day? When it's davening is midrabanan, and yet davening, I think, is taken on such an impact on the Jewish soul that when a Jew who's sensitive to davening three times a day, chas v'shalom, like stops davening, there's like an immediate sense. That person can feel disconnected, separated. Is it along those lines, or is that just a
little too
specific?
That's a perfect example. I think it's a perfect example. When the Chachamim came and they understood that certainly in a context where there wasn't a... whatever, the Beis HaMikdash was losing its centrality, whatever it is, and they said, this is going to become the service of Hashem that people are going to be able to latch onto. And you got to do it. Erev Avoker V'Tzahorayim, evening, morning, and afternoon, you got to do it, because that's going to be the grip on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, when you lose it, the karbanis, so a karban is brought or is not brought. So in a certain sense, you say, you know what the impact was, that a karban wasn't brought on that day, that morning sacrifice, that lamb survived, right? You know what the impact of that is? Unbelievable. I understand. I'm sure it is unbelievable. But would that upend, you know, not perhaps in the same way, that's something that the Chachamim themselves created. And I think that's right and correct. Beyond that, one could also see it in when we see, let's say, the halachas, the mitzvahs d'rabbanan, as those things which the Rabbanan created in order to be able to protect the Torah, let's say, which is many, many, many of the rabbinic laws. So we could say that their failure in that realm, you'll see immediate impact. It'll be a disaster. Right, you're going to start letting people eat a hamburger with a glass of milk, and the next thing you know, they're going to eat a hamburger that's cooked in milk. That's going to have a piece of cheese flopped on it, you know, while it's sizzling. That's the Torah law. This is the rabbit. Sorry about that. I shouldn't have said that, should I? I'm sorry.
Look, don't backlash. You're going to be okay.
We haven't gotten to that yet, so feel free to use that example.
Okay, we won't talk about Avraham Menachai. Inside joke, I said. Right, so you'll see the immediate impact. The sages understood, if you're going to do this, you're going to lose that. But when you would see, when you look at the Torah law itself, you won't necessarily see the immediate impact of doing or not doing. What you can create, what you can develop with your thinking, is going to be that which is where the impact, the sensory impact, is going to be that much more felt, that much more tangible. This is this idea which the Maharal says. And he goes on, however, to talk about another one, another aspect of this, another expression which Chazal used in order to speak about the severity of the impact of failure in rabbinic law. And again, it's the same cut, the same kind of a question, and the response, what Chazal say, in a certain ways is similar, because it also describes a sort of a drastic consequence, but it expresses it more specifically, and therefore Maharal is going to develop it even further, and perhaps this can give us a little bit more of an understanding of Chayav Misa, of that it's that, you know, this notion of there being a death penalty. And here, and those of you who are following in the text, he actually poses the question is on Samech Hei. The paragraph starts on Samech Dalet, where he discusses it. But let's put it this way: the pasuk which he's bringing it from is quoted there on Samech Hei Koheles, which is Uporeitz Geder Yishchenu Nachash. It's a verse in Koheles, the 10th chapter of Koheles, Ecclesiastes, where it says that one who breaks through a fence, a snake will bite him. Right? Now, that is not ancient Chinese proverb. Right? It's a pasuk in Koheles, it's a biblical verse, Peretz Geder Yishchenu Nachash. And the Gemara says, the Gemara understands, naturally, that a geder, a fence, like the term which we may be more familiar with from Pirkei Avos, Siog La Torah, there's a fence around the Torah, right? Those are rabbinic enactments. And they use this verse, the Gemara invokes this verse, to say, with a little bit more form, that which we said before, you got to worry, because, you know, Torah commandments, there's prohibitions, this, that, but when it comes to rabbinic words, a person goes against them is deserving Chayav Misa, deserving the death penalty. And here it says, one who breaks through a fence, as it says, one who breaks through the fence will be bitten by a snake. A death penalty. But it has more form. Again, it's not just saying, like even in the first thing, it's not just saying the consequences will be noticeable. It's saying there's a death penalty. It's saying the snake will bite him. What does that mean? What does that mean, that person will be bitten by the snake? Okay. So, I told you a few weeks ago, around when we were starting up, that what's going to be the most significant and revisited Torah story that's just going to come up again and again and again? Bereshis. So, when we hear something about he's going to get a snake bite, what do we think? Right, the old talking snake of Adam and Chava. Right, when you put that together, of course, with the death penalty, one who goes against the words of the sages is going to be Chayav Misa, is going to get the death penalty. When you think about the snake, well, yes, getting bitten by a snake can very, very well be a death penalty in a contemporary sense, because of whatever, you know, the venom that goes very, very quickly through the veins. But of course, the quote unquote original snake bite was mortality. The snake got Chava to eat and to feed her husband from the tree of knowledge, which, regarding which it says, on the day that you eat from it, you will die. And remember, the hostility between the snake and man in the Torah is described as coming from that sin. Arguably, one would say that the venom of the snake, the fact that, not just that, you know, people, you know, women go, ah, when they see snakes or things like that, the venom, the killer quality of a snake, that it is today still considered a killer, one of the most fatal and frightening of animals in that sense, is because that was the snake's original role. You know, that nice snake who was able to talk and... Okay. Sorry? You're waiting here. Okay, I'll take you in a few minutes. Oh, you can come in, huh? If you like, whatever you like. Okay. So we'll talk. That was the original snake bite, right? That nice, sweet talking snake who was able to talk Chava into anything, and was in fact, in a certain sense, as Chazal says, say, trying to seduce her and to become one with her. But that snake was ended up being, the mortal wound. That's Yishchenu Nachash. That was where the snake started to kill. That was where the snake started to kill Chava, started to kill humanity, and from that came the klala, the curse of Eva Oshis, that there's going to be this hostility, this terrible hatred and distance between the snake and between humanity. So this, we come back now again to this statement of Chazal, Uporetz Geder Yishchenu Nachash, the pasuk in Koheles, one who breaks through the fence is going to get bitten by the snake. And we have Chazal's formulation of that a person who goes against the words of the sages, which were the fences that were created around the Torah, is going to be deserving of death, is going to be Chay of Misa. Right? And we come back again to that original story, to that place where which we visit and will visit Bezras Hashem time and time again as we understand these basics. But what is it? Still, so what does it mean? So you're going against the words of the Chachamim. You're breaking through the fence. So that makes the person vulnerable to the snake bite. We've established already that because it's words of the Chachamim that the Chachamim were able to understand and create, and therefore it's more tangible and appreciable to human beings, so therefore the consequences should be more tangible to human beings. But Yishchenu Nachash, that you should get bitten by a snake, that you break down the fence, get bitten by a snake. So the Maral explains this in a way which we're going to have to try to understand, to get our arms around. And he explains it by starting first with a notion which all the Rishonim speak about all the time, and the Maral speaks about all the time, and it's one which is found as well, just parenthetically, it's also found in non-Jewish philosophy. It's the notion of Chomer Vitzura. Matter and form. Matter and form. Chaymer v'tzura. Matter, right? The simplest picture of it is: you go to the store and you buy a thing of Play-Doh, right? It's a gop. Sorry, it's a ball, right? You go, you roll it around, you get one of those nice, cutouts, cookie cutters, and you take it and you put it in the Play-Doh, and suddenly you have a flower out of the Play-Doh. A moment ago, it was chomer. It was just raw, undeveloped matter, and now you've put a tzura, you've put a form onto it, you've captured it, and you've shaped it, and in that way you have been, as the Maral says elsewhere, you've been tzar alel. We speak in a sense, what's it called? A matzor? A matzor is a siege, right? Uvanisa matzor. You build a siege around a city that you are trying to capture. The enemies came, the Babylonians came, and they laid siege around Yerushalayim. That was called a matzor. In Hebrew, we understand relationship. Etymologically, those words are connected. It's the fence. They were closing in the city. They were building a fence, in a certain sense, around the city, to think about what we're talking about. But whereas the matter previously was just very free, and it could have been anything, and it had no real clear and visible form, what happened was that this person came and he gave it form. In that sense, he conquered it, he defined it, and he limited it. He closed it in. The tzura closes in the chomer. Says the Maral, Divrei Chachamim, the words of the Chachamim, of the sages, they make the getter, they make the fence around the Torah. So the Maral puts forward that what they're doing is the fence. A fence, the way he expresses it, is that a fence goes and it divides between one thing and the next. It gives everything its very, very particular place. And he says that's a fundamental part of the creation of form. Now, there are different ways to understand what the Maral means by that. I'm going to try one way, which may be, again, maybe not jump out from the words of the Maral, but in the free flow of what we've seen from the Maral already, I think that this explanation will will fit with the idea that he's saying, even if it's not exactly as he expresses it. We speak about the words of the Torah, and what the Maharal has shown in the words of the Torah, they only can come from Hashem's wisdom. A person can't see it, can't perceive it. Hashem gives it down to it, and therefore it exists. Just like the neshama that couldn't have been generated from the earth. It's something which is completely from above. If Hashem hadn't given to us, it couldn't exist. But then come along the Chachamim, and with human wisdom, they go and they legislate further, and they develop further, and they understand further. That's something which, like the body of man, could have existed with the existing things that were there before. So too, the words of the Chachamim, that's the human development. That's something which is appreciable, visible by the human being. The words of Torah, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, which before, you know, the Chazal described before creation, they were like black fire on white fire. They were concepts which were completely beyond the realization of man. But what happens when they came down to Moshe Rabbeinu? And what happens when they come down to the words of the Chachamim, to the sages, and to the point where the sages are going to start crunching those words together and being magdir and defining and saying, okay, let's build this around it. What they're doing is that they're taking something which was of no form, which was of such transcendence and so invisible, and now they're coming and they're being magshimit. They're making it physically visible and tangible. They're making it that our brains, our very human brains, are somehow going to be able to see it. And in a sense, that's the tsura of Torah. That's the form of Torah. Just like we have this idea that we say that, you know, before Hashem created the world, there was Torah. Why? There was Torah. There was the truth of Torah. There was the essence of Torah. But it didn't say, you know, don't eat a cow and eat a cow, but don't eat a pork. Davar acher. Why? Because that wasn't there when Hashem created the world. So then the Torah, those concepts, took on a appreciable form by a human being. In a sense, the chomer of Torah, if we can speak about that, which was amorphous, it had no form, no structure, now became structured, limited, human, physical, in a certain sense, to address the issues of the physical world. That's what happens as it comes into the Chachamim, as it comes into people. That's what happens. That's the new shape, the new form of Torah. Chayretz Geder Yishchenu Nachash. Says the Maharal, the form of anything becomes its existence. Right? Nowadays, what happens? How would you describe death in real human terms? How would you describe death? You would say, this very, very sophisticated human being that had all these systems and organs and they were all working together, suddenly it starts coming apart. And this system doesn't interact with this system. The pulmonary system doesn't interact with the circular system, which doesn't interact with the renal functions, and so on and so forth. And everything starts to fall apart. And ultimately, so then le'olein rachmanos lishlam, it falls apart, and the person is returned to the dust, where it literally falls apart. Right? The tzura disappears slowly but surely, and it collapses down into the chaymer. If we don't appreciate the words of the Chachamim, which give form to the Torah, then we lose form. In our world, our existence is the result not of just matter, it's the result of form. And the Chachamim gave Torah form. And when we ignore the words of the Chachamim, then we ignore the form of Torah. And we lose then our own structure. We lose our own internal structure. There's more to talk about. We're not going to talk about it right now. But just to summarize, the idea which we've been learning the last couple of weeks of the Maharal is this remarkable idea that the part of the difference between Divrei Torah, the Dairaisas, and Divrei Chachamim, the Drabonans, the rabbinic laws, is that Divrei Torah are of this other world, invisible, comes from Hashem, could only have come from above. And Divrei Chachamim is already much more pedestrian. Not pedestrian in a, but it's already, that's what the humans were able to appreciate, what the humans were able to create. And when the Torah from above comes into human brains, we make it in a certain sense, in a certain sense that way. That's Torah translated into life. The Chachamim were those translators. The words of the Chachamim, the Gedorim, the fences which they did around it, which limited it, which contained it, which humanized it, which made it processable by human beings. They did that. And if we break through it, and we make Torah again just concepts, amorphous, you know, it's whatever you want it to be, you know, kosher is a concept, you know, to me kosher is a chveis, you know, not fattened veals, you know, whatever it is, you know, or something like that. To me kosher is, you know, this way, that way, or something like that. So it's very nice, we're in the world of concept. But lemaisa, to be able to translate Torah as human beings, we need form. We need form. The Torah gave it form, and the Chachamim gave it form. And the Chachamim were ultimately the masters of getting the form of the receiving of Torah that becomes, you know, humanly decipherable. When we lose it, we lose the human connection. That's Yishchenu Nachash. Okay. Good morning.